Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. If you've listened to the show, you know I'm a big fan of marketplace and marketplace dynamics. If you want to find key to marketplace success, there is a formula for that. It's exactly what we're going to talk about on today's episode of Startup Hustle, which is powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers is difficult, and Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably and as a platform to help you manage that team. Go to Fullscale.io to learn more. There's a link in the show notes to help you get there. With me today, I've got Shirish Nadkarni, who is a serial entrepreneur and author specializing in entrepreneurship, amongst other things. You can go to ShirishNadkarni.com. Now, look, don't try to spell that. Just scroll on down to the show notes and click the link straight out of Medina, Washington. Shirish, welcome to Startup Hustle.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to diving in. I love this topic. But before we get started, how about a little bit about your backstory?
Yeah, so I'm a native of actually Seattle, Washington. I've been here for about 35 years. Started my career at Microsoft in the very early days of MS-DOS, if you might remember that.
I'm old enough to remember that.
Yeah, you're old enough to remember that. And then in 2000, I started a career as a serial entrepreneur. I've done multiple companies, had multiple exits. And now I focus on writing books and investing in and advising startups.
So, as an author of three books, I've learned that the best part about writing a book is finishing it. So, So, you know, we're going to talk today about the key to marketplace success. And, you know, when we talk about a marketplace, I mean, a marketplace could be an industry. I think when it comes to, when I think about the marketplace dynamic, I often think of any location, whether it be physical or online, where buyers and sellers meet to perform transactions. When you think about marketplace and let's start with your definition of it.
You're exactly right, which is that marketplace is a gathering place where consumers and suppliers can meet and they can consummate transactions. Marketplaces can be two-sided. They can be multi-sided. Instacart is a good example of that. Mm-hmm. You know, they have consumers, they have grocery stores, they have drivers, and then they have advertisers, all part of that marketplace.
So, you know, marketplaces are tricky by nature. And I think a lot of I've talked to so many startup founders, and, you know, as the CEO and founder at Fullscale, we help build a lot of stuff. And I have talked to a lot of entrepreneur hopefuls, and they often see, you know, let's kind of start with one of the problems that marketplaces have. And I think it's learning how to populate them. because a lot of times people will build a marketplace, whether it be a website or a store or a true market. If you don't have buyers and sellers in there, then you're going to have a very difficult time getting anything done. And I think that a lot of startup founders and entrepreneurs, especially in the early stages, underestimate the difficulty of getting both of those parties together in one place to meet. How do you solve that problem if you're a brand new company?
You're exactly right. There's a chicken or the egg problem, getting enough suppliers and consumers so that you don't have an empty marketplace when, people come to visit and buy things. I talk about that in my book, Winner Takes All. One of the strategies there is to initially focus on a small geography. So don't try to build a nationwide or global marketplace. Start by focusing on a specific geography and then focusing on suppliers. If you can get suppliers into your marketplace, even without necessarily having them be official members of the marketplace, that's ideal. To give you an example of Instacart, which I'm sure you're familiar with, when they got started, the founder, Apurva Mehta, he actually scraped content from Safeway's website to populate the grocery content on his site. And then people would place orders. He would then actually go to the grocery store, pick up the items, and he would deliver them himself. Same thing with DoorDash. They started in Palo Alto initially, and they populated their website with menus of Palo Alto restaurants. And when somebody called in to place their order, they would turn around and then call that restaurant to place the order on behalf of the consumer. Those are scrappy ways in which you can get going and establish a strong marketplace.
Yeah. And, for those of you, if you're still not grasping the concept, use a site like eBay, which is one of the kind of the original online marketplaces in many ways. And, if you went to eBay and you wanted to buy baseball cards and there weren't any baseball cards, you're going to go somewhere else where there is a populated marketplace. So, yeah, I just felt like that was a good thing to lead in with. I really do talk to a lot of startup founders that seem to, we'll get all these sellers in there. Okay. Well, the buyers, I don't know. I think one of the things that kind of like you mentioned, that's an interesting story. I didn't realize that about DoorDash. It doesn't surprise me that that's the way that it started, but in some ways, you need to do whatever you can to get both parties to go in there. And some of the early lumps that you may have to take as a business is letting them in there for free or reducing fees or doing something that gives them an incentive to be in there. Because guess what, folks? There's a lot of marketplaces that sell a lot of stuff and there's a lot of competition for it. Now, Now, if we talk generally in the marketplace, I think that, the number one reason that startups fail is a poor product market fit. So, I think maybe going with understanding what your customers need and want is maybe a key component of that. What goes into that?
You really need to make sure that you are pursuing a opportunity where there's a real need or real pain point. Going back to the examples of Instacart and DoorDash, Instacart did really well in the pandemic because people were scared of going to grocery stores. So there was a real need for online grocery, shopping. Same thing with DoorDash. People were afraid of going to restaurants, and both of these marketplaces really expanded rapidly during the pandemic, and that they continued to grow since then. But they were addressing some real pain points and needs that people were willing to pay the extra fees to order stuff online.
Now, with that, you talk about DoorDash, which there's competition for that. You've got Uber Eats and Grubhub, and there's other stuff out there. Wow. How do you create a unique value proposition for your marketplace when there's other similar ones out there?
Yeah, so you really have to, you're right, in the food delivery market, there were probably 50 different competitors at one point. It was a very crowded market. And then out of that, you know, it's become winner take most scenario with like three different players. DoorDash, Uber Eats, and Grubhub are kind of some of the survivors that have remained in that marketplace. But let's take the example of DoorDash. Unlike some of their competitors, they actually focused on the suburbs where there was less competition and the order size was much bigger because families, you know, tend to live in the suburbs and, you know, they would be ordering food for their family. And so that was a key way that they differentiated versus their competitor. So each situation is different, but you have to find a particular niche that you can focus on and then expand from that niche to other areas.
Yeah, I'm not going to call out which one it was, but there was a food delivery service that I three straight times couldn't get my order right. And I tried another one and they kept getting it right. And, you know, that quality product or service sometimes can be that differentiator. I think that in the world of software and apps and stuff like that, I do use DoorDash. I am actually really impressed with what they do. It makes it very easy for me to order. Yeah. And you know, it's got, you know, I have a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old. So the moment that I order food, they're immediately asking when dinner's going to arrive. So being able to actually, you know, the tracking mechanisms and stuff that are in there, but, you know, once you get people into your marketplace and they're operating successfully, you're on to something, but make sure, but it's easy to lose them too. And, lack of choice and diversity. And then, if you just have poor quality and terrible delivery and you're a delivery service, you're probably not going to stick around. Now for upstart businesses, one of the things I think if you have a marketplace component or dynamic to what you're doing, you're probably going to embrace a pretty high marketing and, you know, marketing and branding and just advertising costs in the beginning because no one knows who the heck you are. You have to go through, you mentioned like Instacart, which is big, you know, a big thing now, but so many people weren't used to that in the beginning. Do you think that, I mean, if you want to be a key player in any marketplace in these beginning years, do you need to allot an extraordinary amount of your resources and financing or in funding to brand awareness?
Yes, that is true for many of the marketplaces like Instacart and DoorDash. I remember with food delivery, I used to see ads from all the different delivery services offering, you know, $10 off or a free meal for the first meal that you ordered and so forth. And it became a very expensive game. And the way that, again, DoorDash and some of these players survived versus the other players who were either acquired or failed is that, you know, DoorDash, as I said, you know, focused on the suburbs and they could show that the unit economics worked well. And then they were able to get funding, which is crucial for growth, and then use that funding to grow into other markets, continue to prove the unit economics, and that's how they grew. So funding can actually be a key strategic advantage, assuming that you can show that the unit economics work in your favor. So you always have to keep in mind the unit economics, making sure that your cost of customer acquisition and LTV are balanced. You know, generally they say, your LTV to CAC or customer acquisition cost should be no less than, you know, at least 3-1, if not 5-1. So keeping that in mind is very important.
And that still holds true to the point though, that it takes time to establish a lifetime value. If you got to get to the 3-5-1 over your customer acquisition costs, then in some places it might take years. You know, there's a very interesting documentary about Uber. Well, it's not a documentary, it's a mockumentary, I guess. It's about the Uber story and, you know, talking about how competitive that was with Lyft. And they had other competitors early in there. And there's one scene in there where the guy, the venture capitalist, I can't remember what his name is in real life, but he's talking to the founder of Uber and he says, well, how sticky is it? He says, if they ride twice, they're our customer for life.
Yeah.
But you see what they went through. I mean, you're talking, you know, in an effective pricing strategy. In those cases, they were losing tons of money.
Yes.
Just to get people in there and keep them, because they needed them to have that second ride somehow. And sometimes that was giving away the first ride, but they knew that once they got them in there. So, and you know what? I looked back at that when I saw that and I was like, I use Uber. I don't need it very often. I've never even tried Lyft. I made it to that second ride, and I was part of that sticky category. Cause once again, now these are the more closed marketplaces. Like Uber obviously controls that marketplace. It might be a little easier to dictate what goes on and those kind of, do you consider something like DoorDash? Is that an actual marketplace?
Yeah, because they are basically enabling transaction between consumers, right, and restaurants. So yes, absolutely. Yeah. I consider, you know, DoorDash, Uber, all of these as marketplaces.
Yeah. Now, what about the pricing strategy on that? Because that's one of the complaints that people will have about, we actually get our groceries at our house through Instacart, and I don't mind the markup because I value our time at a lot higher than that. But that pricing strategy in the beginning, because, you know, here's the thing is that money that the marketplace operator requires to keep the marketplace going, it's got to come from somewhere. So it's either got to come from marking up someone else's products or taking a fee for participating in the marketplace. I know that a lot of, we've been talking about things like DoorDash a lot of the marketplace, or a lot of the business owners, they don't like those fees.
That's true. You have to be very careful about, I have a section about business models in my book. You have to be very careful about understanding the economics of the suppliers who are in your on your marketplace. DoorDash, for example, you know, charges between 10 to 20% take rate, and you know, restaurants have very slim margins, and then you have, you know, fees on top of that, delivery fee and all that. So and you also find that restaurant owners will actually mark up their menu in order to pay DoorDash their fee. So suddenly, you know, a $50 order, you know, becomes $75, $80 and becomes really very expensive. And that can depress demand. So you have to be, you know, careful about, of course, you have to make a profit at the end of the day, but you have to keep your costs down so that you're not charging too much in fees and making this a very expensive proposition for your consumers.
If you're an entrepreneur that's wanting to, or to either start any kind of marketplace or grow one you've already got, what are some of the things that you're likely to not think about that are going to come up and be a big deal?
Yeah, I would say, the challenge of, you know, fees, in order to be profitable, you know, you're spending a lot of your VC money, right? And you're burning through all that cash. There's a temptation to kind of layer in a variety of different fees over time to make your business more profitable. That's something that you don't really understand the unit economics until you get into it. And you have to make a profit, especially as you go do an IPO. You need to show that, you know, within 2 years of your IPO, you're going to become profitable. And so you start layering fees and so forth, and that depresses demand from your consumers. So those are things that you don't really fully understand until you actually get into the economics of the situation.
I feel like the cost of customer service and support is something that can be grossly underestimated. Yeah. You know, just meaning like you look at like, and I know we keep using DoorDash as an example, but if half of your meal doesn't come.
Yeah.
I mean, and I've noticed a lot of the platforms have found ways to automate a lot of that because the overwhelming cost of people doing that or the inability to keep up with that at scale is probably very difficult. And you know, like I said, if a delivery service forgets half your delivery and you don't get a reply on that for 2 days, that's not very good. So you probably you know, you have some scalability issues that could come up. And I think another thing too is we'll continue to adapt, because, you know, we're talking about like DoorDash, and that to me, that was like the third or fourth meal delivery thing, because like Postmates was out there,
yeah,
and a lot of other stuff first, you know, Grubhub. And then you kind of see this, you know, who's learning to adapt and who's learning how to, you know, marketplaces can change. I was a ticket broker for 8 years of my life. And you want to talk about, that's a fully dynamic marketplace. I mean, fluid prices changing all day, every day, and the ability to adapt to things that were going on. Now, like with event-based stuff, you could have an outdoor event and now here comes a rainy day. And something that you have that was very valuable 1 minute is now almost trash if you can even sell it. And I think that your ability to, you know, successfully adapt to changes and, I don't know, continue to innovate and find new find new people to put inside the marketplace. Mm-hmm. I know that a lot of marketplaces in general really are cash flow negative for so long. So
yeah, right.
That's it's very
difficult. Customer service and support is another big factor that drives the economics of the business, and they've had to tighten up on that. I remember there was an order I placed on DoorDash once where the order arrived like 45 minutes later than they had anticipated, which was already an hour, you know, and it turned out to be an hour 45 minutes. So I complained about it, expecting that they would give me a $10 off certificate or something of that sort, but they didn't. They just said, sorry, but there was no compensation for me. So I suspect that that's happened because of the economics of the business. They just can't afford to give away, you know, free product or dollars off and so forth.
Yeah, you know, now if we talk about micro marketplaces, my business is similar to that. It's very close. Now, you know, Full Scale's the sponsor, Startup Hustle. And if you want to find expert software developers, it doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you go to fullscale.io, where you can build a software team quickly and affordably. And you talk about these like mini marketplaces. Now, I'm not a true marketplace because we're the only vendor. Mm-hmm. And there, we only let certain buyers in, but it feels similar to it. Asking the questions that match people up with the solutions is the kind of data-driven decisions that I think a lot of marketplaces need to make. Mm-hmm. You look at all these, I don't know, you look at all these different things that you might see in an app or a website or a user interface. And, you know, it's the data-driven decisions about each and every buyer or seller that can help you. Look, the more stuff you put in front of people that they're interested in, the more likely they are to stay in the marketplace. What's some knowledge that you can transfer on about keeping people in the marketplace environment?
I mean, the biggest way to do that is to ensure, you know, a wide range of suppliers. So, you know, Amazon, for example, is very successful versus somebody like Walmart. I mean, Amazon has 2.3 million sellers, and Walmart has also tried to become a marketplace, and they have only 50,000 sellers. And these days, I can think of virtually any kind of need and go search for that on Amazon, and there'll be a product that will show up that satisfies my needs. So I'm not going to waste time searching on Walmart. I'm just going to go straight to Amazon because they have a wide range of suppliers to meet my needs. And it becomes difficult for a supplier to be on multiple marketplaces because just being on Amazon is more than a full-time job. And so that's why you see many more suppliers on somebody like Amazon versus Walmart. It's very hard to multi-tenant and be on multiple marketplaces.
I mean, Amazon's probably the king of all marketplaces in North America. I mean, at least by volume. And it's, you know, what's interesting is think about that, folks. You know, Amazon, well, Amazon does own some of the products they sell now, but they didn't start by making them. They'll go in and acquire some of the companies that they find to be interesting, and then they become Amazon's choice or something like that. But, you know, Amazon's in the logistics business. Mm-hmm. And if we want to talk about data-driven decisions, they also may be the king of that. Amazon will look at an employee and how many steps do they take? How many times do they turn to the left? Do they turn to the right? What can we do to reduce that or streamline that? And it's because across hundreds of thousands of employees, two extra steps per person per day turns into billions of steps and wasted time. And that's where they carve out their margin and all of it. It's definitely data driven. When do you realize that your marketplace or your concept or what you're working with, like, what are some signals that it might not be scalable?
Yeah, I mean, it's totally a function of, the supply side of the equation. If you're not getting enough suppliers on your platform, and as I said, you don't have to build a marketplace initially on a nationwide or global basis. You can just start on in a specific region to make your life a lot easier. But if you're finding that it's getting very difficult to get suppliers on board, then obviously you don't really have a strong value proposition. And so you have to think about, you have to be scrappy like DoorDash and Instacart to figure out how to get that content initially onto your platform before you actually sign up the supplier. So that's, I think, a critical piece of the equation.
I think that goes back to that original statement that I made, 20 minutes ago, or about if you don't have buyers and sellers in there. And I think that's where, there are a lot of marketplaces. There's a lot of places to put your attention. And like you mentioned, the more of those you're selling in, the more balls you have in the air while you're juggling at the business. And, it's going to be very difficult to attract a lot of new distributors or sellers of product if you don't have buyers in the marketplace. But if you have a ton of buyers, you might have a different problem of how can I get these sellers in here faster?
Yeah.
And you also think about it as we look back at, Amazon has gone through an evolution as well, because they've had quality control issues. They've had issues with counterfeit, fake, weird stuff coming in, and that's back to a quality product and service that needs to exist. Because as a buyer, you only need to experience that one time. I think that when you talk about being an Amazon user, and we are at our household. You buy with it. Well, first off, it's easy to buy. There aren't a whole lot of obstacles. If you want to grow the marketplace, make it easy for buyers and sellers to do transactions.
Yeah.
That's what you're paying for when you pay the Amazon fees as a seller. You're paying for the logistics. You're paying for them to deliver it, for all of it.
Yeah.
You got to have a little bit of respect and understanding around that.
Building that trust.
Yeah.
With your consumers. Is very important. Today we have a lot of trust in Amazon. First of all, you have the reviews and rating system. So and what's interesting is that Amazon also
they've had problems with that too.
I mean, even that
you had to go in and clean it up in mass.
For sure. But these days Amazon is also including information about what kind of returns the vendor is seeing. So it's a signal to the buyer that, hey, if this supplier has a lot of returns, don't buy this product. And if you do, you have the ability to return it most of the time at no cost to you. So they made it really, they've created a lot of trust in the system that you feel comfortable buying products from vendors who are not Amazon. And so that worked really well for them.
Yeah, I think the speed of delivery is just the key part there. I bought something on Amazon yesterday and they brought it to me yesterday. All right. I'm always surprised when that happens.
Yeah, and in fact,
I'm not used to that.
They have delivery options for like 9 p.m. to 3 a.m. in the mornings, and just the same day. It's just amazing what they've accomplished.
So let's talk about things from a technical standpoint. And, you know, I always, when I talk to startup founders, I notice that most of the time they're planning seems to all be structured around what to do to prevent the sky from falling, which is natural, but very few seem to be planning for what will happen if everything in the plan goes right. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, there's things that are, I don't know, if you can't support the, if you don't have a scalable technology infrastructure, meaning your marketplace, if you are a tech-driven marketplace, you don't have the ability to have all of the buyers that are coming in. Mm-hmm. You can't handle that. You're going to just kind of sully your own reputation in a hurry.
Yeah.
But at the same time, as businesses, like, yeah, I think the thing I've learned about building software is 9 women don't make a baby in a month. So you can't just always, you have to go through an evolutionary process of you know, figuring out how to support the technology side of it. I mean, if it's always crashing or it's broken or something's wrong, then you don't really have much. What have you learned about that over the years?
Yeah, you know, investing upfront for success is very important. You know, one of the companies that I started was in the language learning space. And over time, we had over 15 million members in 200 different countries, and we created a marketplace where we connected language learners with language tutors, and we had over 300,000 language, you know, tutors. And so, and the success came pretty quickly. So we had to really scramble to make sure that, and this was a time when AWS didn't really exist. This was in 2007. I mean, they were around.
Oh, yeah, that was back when you get like a radio host wouldn't want to mention your website because the moment they did, they'd crash you.
Yeah. So it was doubly difficult for us to scale. But these days, given the fact that you can build your system on AWS and you can scale up and scale down, you know, if you get a, you know, we had actually a mention in the New York Times, and boy, did our traffic just go through the roof because of that. And so these days, it is a lot easier to scale up resources on Amazon for temporary blips and then grow beyond that. So things have become a little easier from in that perspective.
Yeah, I remember, you know, I mentioned being in the ticket event ticketing business. And one of the things we did was build actual marketplaces that facilitated transactions between buyers and sellers. And, you know, we had multiple that we owned and operated. But the main one that we had, which, you know, had a lot of search engine optimization success, we'd sometimes come to it and it would be crashed. And of course, and this is in 2008, 2009. And, you know, there weren't the kind of notification tools to let you know. But what would happen would be that, you know, an artist or a performer or a band would announce a tour and everyone would get really excited and they'd go search and they'd find our website. And this big influx of people would just crash the whole thing because this was pre-cloud.
Yeah.
And it would exhaust the server resources. And, you know, I remember that one of our websites ranked first for the term Justin Bieber tickets.
Wow.
And I was terrified that Justin Bieber would announce a tour.
Yeah.
Because it could have crashed our website for days, you know, like it could. And bringing the rest of the marketplace to not a good place. So, there are, I mean, the world of technology has definitely caught up with that. And if you're not aware what cloud servers really do, it means if you exhaust the ability for the server your thing exists in, it will draw on extra resources from all the servers that are around it and prevent a lot of that stuff. So,
Right. Yeah,
that's a big thing. So let's talk about your your language marketplace. Did that same software product also facilitate the conversations between the tutor and the student?
Yes. So we had
that's a lot of bandwidth. Yeah.
Yeah. There was a chat-based system that would allow language learners to connect with tutors and then practice over our network. Yeah. Yeah.
If you think about that, you said there was 15 million users.
Yeah, in 200 different countries. Yeah.
In 200 countries. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That seems like a lot to keep up with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, sometimes the things that you want as an entrepreneur, like did you say you had a Wall Street Journal mention?
New York Times.
New York Times. Okay, sure. You're like, God, I can't wait till we get that. And then you realize, oh my God, what did we just, we got what we asked for. And that's a real thing. So
right. Fortunately, as you know, this was in 2007. That's when we got started. And as I mentioned, AWS was also getting started at that point. Over time, we were able to migrate our service to AWS. And so things became a lot easier in terms of scaling the system.
That was probably 2009, 2010.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we were in that same boat. And I just remember that. Nothing's more frustrating than having buyers and sellers lined up and you can't open the front door.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's definitely an issue. All right. So, you know, so much of all of this is coming down to being able to run a sustainable marketplace. And I don't necessarily mean from the environmental standpoint, but, you know, what are some of the tips that you learned about ongoing sustainability, keeping people interested? I think that for those of us that are old enough to remember using MS-DOS, is that a way to say that we're like 50 or older?
Yeah.
But you know, we've seen so many things come and go. We go back to eBay. eBay's still out there. It's not quite the titan that it was when it first came out, but it's definitely sustained itself. What are some of the things you learned about keeping things sustainable and keeping people coming back? You look at like, you know, Facebook just launched Threads and got 100 million users, and then 2 weeks later, it has a 70% decline.
Yeah, yeah,
and all that, meaning they're not doing a good job of keeping people engaged and keeping people excited. I mean, what are some of the things you learned about how to do that?
Yeah, so you know, you have to, in my book, I talk about metrics and what are some of the key metrics that you need to track. So one of the things that you need to keep an eye on is the liquidity in the marketplace, that whenever I conduct a search, for example, that there are multiple suppliers that can be brought to the attention of the buyer, or in the case of Uber, that if I want to go on a ride somewhere, that that I can get a ride in within 5 to max 10 minutes, right? So as you grow, you may scale into new markets. So you have to start all over again in establishing the marketplace in a different location. So that's one thing that you need to pay attention to. Second thing that you need to pay attention to is, is supplier liquidity and time to close the sale and so forth. So there are a bunch of metrics that you need to track that I talk about in the book that are important to ensuring sustainability of your marketplace.
I think some of the keys are, well, don't underestimate how quickly people are going to forget about you.
Yeah.
And what you do. You know, you got to continue to find a way to retarget the audiences. And, you know, I noticed that a lot of successful marketplaces are really good at that. They get back to the data-driven decisions. You know, you ever get an email from a marketplace you've been in and it's like, hey, are you still interested in XYZ? Because we have some more of them.
Yeah.
And, that's retargeting. And look, it's going to take some transactions before you're the go-to marketplace for a lot of people. Just because you did one doesn't mean you got them. You got to get in there 2, 3, 4, who knows how many times before they turn to you first. And I think you got to continue to find ways to tell people there's something new, there's something different, there's something that here's a reason to come buy something now, like Prime Day. I mean, think about it. Amazon has literally created their own 2-day holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty serious, man. I mean, they do billions in sales on those days. And, you know, and that's a reason for you to come in and buy stuff. It's a reason for sellers to stock up on their merchandise. It's a reason for them to get more competitive in that marketplace. And it, you know, that's in the world of sales and promotions, that's often known as the coming event, meaning like the event comes and it goes. And if you know, Prime Day isn't there the third day,
yeah,
you got to have a reason to buy. So I think that that's offering people value, however that is. And in that particular case, it's a huge assortment of things that you didn't know you couldn't live without.
Right.
Until you went in there, I've got to find a way to erase the Amazon app from my wife's phone during Prime Day every year. Because there are definitely a large assortment of things that we didn't know we could live without. As we're running out of time, a couple of things. You have two books. You have Winner Takes All, which is a case study in how online marketplaces are creating modern monopolies. Also, From Startup to Exit, An Insider's Guide to Launching and Scaling Your Tech Business, which it looks like you co-wrote that with Tom Parks. And those are available on Amazon. Mm-hmm. What do you know? In a very effective marketplace, you can order those today, folks, and have them in 2 days. You know, it's funny, as an author of 3 titles myself, a lot of people don't realize Amazon often prints these books as people order them.
Yes, that's amazing. Yeah, yeah.
And it's I'm recording this on a Monday. We're at about noon here in Kansas City, and according to Amazon, I can have either of your books by Wednesday.
Yeah,
think about that, folks. They are going to print, most likely print a copy of it.
Right.
I think once they figure out your order flow, they may print a couple ahead of time.
But still, it's a good thing because I don't have to pay for inventory. Otherwise, I've had to, print a certain number in advance, keep an inventory, pay Amazon for holding it, all of that. So that cost is all, gone away.
I got a funny story about that. I wrote my first 2 books, came out just a couple months apart. I actually wrote them at the same time. And I needed copies for myself. So I ordered 2,500 of each. Without truly considering how big that was.
Mm-hmm.
I had a truck outside my office that had 2 pallets of my books. And the guy said, do you have a forklift or anything to get these out of the truck? I was completely unprepared for that kind of delivery. So, if you don't know much about truck deliveries, the driver isn't responsible for getting anything off the truck. That's your problem.
Mm.
But yeah, so we sat there for about 30 minutes, looking like the volunteer line or trying to stack up sandbags to stop a flood, one box. And we were a little sore from that the next day. So yeah, 5,000 books takes up a lot of space, but ordering one of each of Shirish's does not. So why don't you go ahead and do that? Here we are at the end of another episode of Startup Hustle brought to you by Fullscale.io. If you need to hire software engineers, testers, or leaders, Fullscale can help. We have the people and the platform to help you build and manage a team of experts. Just go to fullscale.io, where all you need to do is answer a few questions and let our platform match you up with our fully vetted, highly experienced team of software engineers, testers, and leaders. At Fullscale, we specialize in building long-term teams that work only for you. Learn more at fullscale.io. There's a link for that in the show notes. There is also a link to Shirish's website where you can learn more about him and his book. You go grab a couple copies of that. Shirish, what would you like to say to everyone on the way out today?
Well, maybe I'll just mention that I spend a lot of my time actually helping, advising entrepreneurs. I'm a member of an organization called TIE, T-I-E, which is a global nonprofit that fosters entrepreneurship around the world. And I have actually a program called TIE Entrepreneur Institute, which helps, is a program with 10 different sessions covering all kinds of topics from company formation to startup, vetting your startup idea, fundraising, et cetera. It's a great program to help you get started as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, on the way out, I got a couple comments about marketplaces. I just want to go right back to that beginning statement. If you're trying to start one, you got to really dig deep into what it's going to cost to fill the marketplace, both from a buyer's and a seller's perspective. I find that so many early stage founders have a really good plan for getting one of the two in there. If you don't have both, you don't have a marketplace. You just have a place where a bunch of sellers or buyers might be hanging out. And I will tell you right now that any marketplace that doesn't have stuff for sale, buyers are going to walk in and walk right back out. It's the equivalent of a store with empty shelves. You're going to walk in, you see it right away, and you turn right back around. And getting those people to come back again, exponentially harder than it was to get them to come in the first time. Give a lot of thought to how you're going to do that and do what it takes to populate both sides of it. And then you truly have a marketplace and you might be onto something. Charisse, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm going to catch up with you down the road.
All right. Great. Great being with you today.
Thanks.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.